Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Okay, continue with 4.2. Page 79. Question 31. I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable even to the demigods. So he's asking about his, he mentions here, see, his personal energies, right? They're not impersonal energies. So they have personality, they have nature, they have things that they do, they have a natural relation with other energies. So in the creation then, these energies, these personal energies of the Lord are interacting. So technically speaking then, even though it's inferior, in one sense you could say it's not the superior pastimes. It's like Vraja is considered the topmost pastimes, you know, perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So the material pastimes of creation, maintenance, and dissolution are also part of the Lord's pastimes. So these energies acting together, then we see, their interaction, technically speaking, is not material. Right? They may be temporarily manifested, but their interaction is not material. Does this make sense? So the Lord's, the universal form and how he's empowered everything, then those, the form of it you could say is material, but the energies are not. Right? We take it because the form is manifest through the material energy, through the, you know, the gross and subtle elements. Right? But the energies that are actually involved with each other are not. They're the Lord's potencies. Does that make sense? So, technically speaking, there is nothing mundane even about the material pastimes. Now, I'm not talking about the Leela avatars. I'm talking about creation, maintenance, disillusion. Right? Does this make sense? Now, so if a living entity, like being in the material world, takes part in those pastimes, means he's going to take part anyway. Now he has a few choices he can do. In taking part in those pastimes, he can claim ownership of the pastime and the results of the pastime. So because of that, then, because the pastime is happening through the gross manifestation of the material energy, right? Then that means the results coming from that will also manifest in the gross. Does that make sense? So if you claim ownership of it, then to receive those results, where do you have to be to get them? Does that make sense? Right? So then, now, if you perform, you're involved in those pastimes, but you don't claim ownership, then as these pastimes are also transcendental, so will you become. Right? That's Naishkarmya. Right? But these pastimes are not, how you would say, the Lord's Leela in that, means the energies are there, they're interacting. So all those personalities, they're all expansions of the original, but it's still not on the same platform. It will get you out of the material world. Right? Does that make sense? Now, if you're involved in the very same activities, but in these activities you're doing it to please Krishna, that's what the energies are also doing. Does that make sense? So that will take you back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Now in this, then, it's important to note the point that Jiva Goswami was making in the last chapter, the difference between the ritual and the performance of the ritual. Right? The ritual is, or let's say, the attitude or the consciousness in performing the ritual. Because the ritual and the action of the ritual is Krishna, because there isn't anything else other than Him anyway. Does that make sense? So it's not that you performing the ritual that makes it, means us perfect, because the same thing. If our consciousness is material or fruitive, then that ritual, even though it's Krishna, will give you the material result. If you're performing the ritual without attachment, then it will give you that result of, means, the, because it is Krishna, it's not situated in the spirit, in the material world. Does that make sense? It's actually transcendental. So you will be transcendentally situated. Right? But it doesn't give you Krishna. But if the same ritual is performed, understanding that this is Krishna and seeing a connection to Krishna to please Krishna, right? Then that will give you bhakti. Right? So the consciousness is different from the ritual, because the ritual anyway is Krishna. But He's going to reciprocate with you according to your consciousness, right? This is rasa. He's the Vishai, and we're the Ashray. So Krishna will reciprocate with us according to what aspect of rasa we embody. Does that make sense? So if it's mundane, He'll reciprocate materially. If it's spiritual, He'll reciprocate spiritually. If it's devotional, He'll reciprocate devotionally. Right? Just like with Mother Yashoda, He reciprocates as a son, as the cowherd boys, as a friend, as the gopis, as their lover. Does that make sense? So it's all just pastime. Right? Generally, we don't overemphasize that side of it, because then we think that, oh, it's all transcendental. No, it's only transcendental. It is transcendental, but you'll only get a transcendental result if you're transcendental. Right? It's not that, oh, it's all the Lord's pastime, so I just do whatever I like and it's spiritual. No. To Krishna, yes, it is spiritual, because it's Him. But to us, if we don't see it as Him, we don't get the spiritual result. Let us say the devotional result. Does that make sense? That's why even the... Yeah, okay. Is that clear? So it's very interesting, this point is by His personal energies. He doesn't say it's impersonal energies, because there aren't any. Does that make sense? We can perceive them that way, but they aren't. Right? Material energy is a person. Right? So then all her expansions will also be people. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Question 32. Kindly describe how the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, engages His different energies and different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. In other words, in Him, the world has been created because we want it. So then, now He is just, it is His pastime that He creates the environment and operates the environment. Right? But us doing what we do is not Him. He's not the cause of it. We're the cause of it. He simply makes these different opportunities available. Like you go to a fair, right? All the rides are running, right? You just decide which one you get on. And you could say, well, they're running the fair. No, they're running the fair because you're coming there to go on it. Right? If nobody came, there'd be no fair. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So these are the options that are there. You choose what you want. And the experiences you get from it are your own, because you claim them. I go there to enjoy. So you may have a good time, you may have a bad time, right? You go on the roller coaster, you may have a good time, it may not be such a great time like that. Does that make sense? So it's just, so he's sporting, he's doing his things because it's him and his energies, so it's like that. But when it comes down to us, we cover that, those, with our own desire. Yeah? Does that make sense? Then question 33. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. Whether he alone acts with the modes of nature, or simply expands in many forms, or expands consecutively to direct the modes of nature. Right, so in other words, whether he personally does, whether he expands out into his energies, or whether he expands as Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva and directs the modes. Doesn't matter, he does all those things. So now here, it's not presented as a question, means as such, but what he's asking is to speak on these topics. Does that make sense? Like that means these means how he deals with the modes of nature. You know, like that. What about the cough syrup? The permanent bottle of cough syrup sitting here in front. You get? So now, on this, then, grammatically, then he shows how it's a question, because the acharyas say it's a question. Right? Though in English, when you translate, it doesn't seem to come across as one. Right? But then now he'll, this note, then he gives grammatically how that works, so it actually shows how it's a question. Verse 9 is not phrased as a question in Srila Prabhupada's translation. But in verse 10, Maharaj Parikit refers to this and the earlier two verses as Vichikshitam etan me, these doubtful inquiries of mine. In the translation to verse 9, the word whether is used, which implied by the Sanskrit tu, but, and va, either. The Sanskrit eka, buddhisha, and janmabhi refer to the original personality of Godhead, his simultaneous expansions and his appearances, one after another in the material world. By putting emphasis on whether, the translation could be rephrased this way. So this would be putting it into question. You brought, you didn't bring? The Lord is one, but whether he acts alone with the modes of material nature, or he expands in many forms for the same purpose, or he appears in the material world in consecutive incarnations to direct the modes of nature. Okay. Any questions on this? No. Okay, 4.3, Riti. The philosophical significance of Maharaj Parikit's questions as distilled from verses 6 to 10 and their purports. One should understand the ways and means of Krishna's relationship to the material world. All that exists come from Krishna. How then does he create? One should not jump to his intimate pastimes of Vrindavan, neglecting knowledge of the greatness of God. One should first learn of the supreme power and authority of the Lord. One should know how he creates, maintains, and destroys the material universes. One should understand that he is separate and independent from all his energies. Although to fully understand the Lord's energies, names, and expansions is not possible, Krishna in his mercy does reveal himself by the medium of pure devotional service up to the limits of an individual soul's capacity for transcendental knowledge. A person may be learned and scholarly, but he cannot realize the Lord except through the Shastra, illuminated by the example and teachings of the Lord's pure devotees. Thus, to know the Lord, one must first approach a spiritual master who not only is well versed in the Vedic literatures, but who is also a great devotee with factual realization of the Lord and his different energies. Right, so the point is being made here, as we got from Parishishtam, the Pratigya, the statement of purpose, is that it's not, the intimate pastimes are not going to be appreciated unless you can appreciate the Lord's creation, maintenance, and dissolution. Right? So the pastimes that happen in the material world, creating, maintaining the material world, and in maintaining the material world, in maintaining what's the actual essence, or that Krishna consciousness as he comes as the Leela avatars, right? That we would generally think of as his pastimes, then all that is what should be studied first. Does that make sense? So once we know the creation, maintenance, and dissolution, then we'll appreciate the pastimes of the Leela avatars. Right? Appreciating that, then we can appreciate his pastimes in Vrindavan. Even though it's the greatest, but it's not going to be appreciated. Just like a person with jaundice is not going to appreciate the rock candy. Right? Because it's not that there's a problem with the rock candy, the problem is with themselves. So there's no problem in the pastimes of the 10th canto. It's just without the understanding of the first nine, there'll be a difficulty. Therefore, when Prabhupada wrote the Krishna book, then he gave the 10th canto with the nine cantos already written into it. Right? So in between the various points of the pastimes, he would then go out and explain the background points that you would have learned by studying the first nine cantos. Right? So very, very, very clever, you know, this rendition. Yes?
What's the reason that there's two cantos after the 10th canto?
Why there's two cantos after? That we discussed yesterday. You know? That in any activity there's a preliminary, the activity itself, and a conclusion. Because the conclusion is what creates the bonding between the personalities that are involved in the activity itself. Right? You know, if two people are doing something together, as soon as that action is done, they don't just immediately just disappear. You know, it's just like, you know, you come together, you sit at the table, you're eating, you're talking, it's a very nice atmosphere, and as soon as the last bite is eaten, just without a word, they get off and go off in different directions, that's it. You know what I'm saying? If that happened, would anybody look back on it as a nice meal? They would tend to not. Therefore, there has to be the conclusion. After eating, sitting, talking, going washing, sitting in the next room, doing whatever it is that will actually conclude the activity. Right? And before that, there's a preliminary. Right? So if 10th canto is the main activity, you have the first nine cantos as preliminary, then the 10th canto, 11th, 12th is conclusion. Why not two? Is there a problem with two?
No, maybe there's a reason for it.
I don't know. That I don't know. That we can't say. Okay. You know, here's the principle. The principle is what we're talking on now. Like in Gita, we mentioned that you have the first 11 chapters, then you have the 12th chapter that actually talks on devotion. Then you have the last six chapters. So you have the same thing, the preliminary, the activity, the conclusion. Any yajna, you have Kushandika, which is the opening, then the yajna itself, the homa, and then the Kushandika, which is the closing. So it's just how things work. Right? You know, you have the sambandha, which is the preliminary, then you have the activity itself, the abhideya, then the conclusion and the prayojana. So it's just how things function. Does that make sense? Yeah. Parishishtam, appendix, Vinodikam. Jiva Goswami sat sandarbhas. In Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 115, Jiva Goswami draws our attention to verse 17 of chapter 4, canto 2, as an example of a Vyatireka verse compared to 7th purport. The glories of chanting the Lord's holy name are also described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2-11. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all. including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Indirect statements. Vyatireka, an injunction of what is forbidden, should be avoided, is described in the following passage from both the Brihadaranyaka Purana and Padma Purana. Nimisha. Vyatireka, or an indirect statement, teaches that one should perform devotional service only by raising questions about the value of other activities if devotion is absent in them. What is the use of doing homa, offering ghee into the fire of yajna, if it is not to satisfy Krishna? Right? What is the use of studying the Vedas? What is the use of studying other scriptures? What is the use of going on pilgrimage? What is the use of practicing austerities? What is the use of performing sacrifices? What is the use of these things to anyone who has no devotion to Lord Vishnu? Right? So that's Brihadaranyaka and Padma Purana. What is the use of studying many scriptures? What is the use of performing many sacrifices? What is the use of performing 1,000 Vajapaya Yajnas? What is the use of these things to a person filled with devotion to Lord Krishna, the Savior from miseries? Right, so here it even inverted it. What's the use to someone who's already serving Krishna? The other one is, what's the use if they're not connected to Krishna? Right? So basically we see is devotion to Krishna, that's the usefulness. Other things are not very useful. That all kinds of spiritual activities are useless without devotional service is also described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.17. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-auspicious Lord Sri Krishna again and again, because the great learned sages, the great performers of charity, the great workers of distinction, the great philosophers and mystics, the great chanters of the Vedic hymns, and the great followers of Vedic principles cannot achieve any fruitful results without dedication of such great qualities to the service of the Lord. Right? So this is the verse he's bringing out. Right? That all this means... he's offering his obeisances to Krishna for who he is, and that all these other things have no use, because what he's mentioned is basically everything. Right? Your charity, works of distinction, philosophers, mystics, chanters, and those who follow the Vedic principles. So it doesn't really leave anything else. Right? So has no meaning. Fruitful result, because you may get some temporary result, but you won't get anything that you would call serious, right? Because fruitful means becoming Krishna conscious. Just getting the material result, we've been doing that forever, and we're still here, and we're still not satisfied, right? No matter what you get, it's only that you're trying to get it. Getting it means you get happy, but once you have it, then what? You know what I'm saying? You think about it, how many things that you have, and that at some point in time there was a great endeavor to gain them and there was a great happiness upon achieving them. So theoretically you should be extremely happy. You put all that happiness together. Right? But if you think about it, you know, it's just another day. You know, you woke up, it's just another day. But you have all those things that at one point you were working very hard for. You know, some for a short time, some for maybe years. And then you finally attain them. But you don't feel any different today than you did yesterday, now that they've been attained. Does that make sense? So it's only the moment of attainment that happiness is there. Does that make sense? So that's why it's saying is, even though you've achieved any fruitful result, means you've gotten your result, but it's actually not fruitful, because unless that some Krishna consciousness is there, that's what's important. Because once you have that item, you have it, it becomes very ordinary. There's nothing special in it anymore. Does that make sense? So the real fruit of an activity is the Krishna consciousness that is gained, the Krishna consciousness experience from using it in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why everything should be connected like that, no matter what it is, right? That's the point. It means he's used this verse, free from all desire, those are desires of all material enjoyment. Still, the chanting of the holy names is your process. Right? So that means all these persons can connect everything to Krishna. Is that okay? Any questions? In Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 56, Srila Jiva Goswami points out the special significance of Sri Sukadeva's utterance of verse 20. Consult 20th purport. What is the need to explain this point any further? Lord Krishna's pastimes are described to the exclusion of any other topic in the 10th and 11th cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, which constitute half of the entire book. Interesting to know. Other forms of the Lord are similarly described in the first 9 cantos, whereas the pastimes of Lord Krishna are elaborately described in the 10th and 11th cantos. We may therefore conclude that the description of Lord Krishna is the principal subject matter of the Bhagavatam. We may also note that Sukadeva Goswami begins the teachings of the Bhagavatam by appealing for the mercy of Sri Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam 2:40:20, in the following words. May Lord Sri Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all the goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, and the supreme incarnation on earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful upon me. So also he seems he's giving here, okay. Right, so this is how he's opening. Taking the blessings of Krishna. So that would mean, because in a literature, who it's meant for, you know, who it means in an introduction must have some respect of the deity, right? Whoever is your deity or whoever is the deity that you're dealing with, right? So then, and in there, then you must explain. There's glories of that deity, and then there'll be who is the audience, who it's for, what's the subject matter, everything. So we see here the deity is Krishna, and we see that, you know, so many of the activities with the devotees is what is special. Right? So these things are coming out in his introduction. Does this make sense? It's called the Anubandha Chatushtaya. It means your explanation of, you know, it means your introduction to the whole book, like that. Many think it's just a verse, but it also can include much more than a verse, a run of verses, even a whole chapter. And interesting, it also includes the conclusion, or the last verse, or those last bits that conclude the book. You know, so it's a concept. So generally it'll be, then he'll put it into one verse, or like Bhagavatam, you have the 3 main verses to start the whole book. But then when Suta Goswami starts speaking, he also does that. Then Sukadeva starts speaking, he also does it. So again and again we see that, you know, it's all about Krishna. Krishna and his pastimes with his devotees. But in here it's interesting. The husband of the goddess of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, therefore the leader of all living, the controller of all intelligence, supreme incarnation. So it's kind of like you get all the elements of Sankarshan, Prajumna, Anuruddha, and Vasudev. You know, it's like here he's director, goddess of fortune, husband of the goddess of fortune, control of all intelligence, Prajumna, how do you say, leader of all living entities, Aniruddha, director of sacrifices, Sankarshan, supreme incarnation of on earth, Vasudev. See, you get, so it's, because these are all the aspects of Krishna's personality, Right, there's four main aspects. There's Dhirodatta, Dhiralalita, Dhirapashanta, and Dhiraodatta. So there'll always be, you know, you'll see that commonly coming through, the reference to these four. In Anucheta 64 of the same Sundarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami makes another observation about verse 20. 1. Before speaking to Brahma, the four essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna revealed himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the following verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.15. Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community, the Lord of the Yadu dynasty, the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe, and who is served by the foremost servitors like Nanda, Sunanda, Prabala, Arjuna, his immediate associates in Dwarka. In this verse, the words Akhila Sarvatma Patim means the Lord of all the heroes in the Yadu dynasty. Nimesha, the term Satvata, from the first line, Dadarsha Tatrakila Satvatam Pati, specifically means Lord of the Yadus. As confirmed by Srila Shira Swami in his Tika, he identifies Tatra here from the first line as signifying Maha Vaikuntha. So Maha Vaikuntha means that would be Dwarka, right? Dwarka is also counted as Vaikuntha, but it's like the main Vaikuntha, right? And then from there expands everything else, all the other Vaikunthas. Does that make sense? Also from there then expands the Purusha avatars, right? Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. Means, well, here, actually, there, Sankarshan's there. Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha. Vasudeva comes and performs the lila pastimes within the material world. Right? So, Mahavaikuntha, that's from there that you get the spiritual material worlds expanding. So then you have Vrindavan, and then Mathura is like a juncture between this Vaikuntha and Vrindavan. Right? So it has elements of both, like that. Two, that Sri Krishna, the master of the Yadu dynasty, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is confirmed in the following verse spoken by Sukadeva Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.20. Nimisha, at times Satvata may mean Vaishnava, but in this case it means dynasty. Right? In other words, the dynasty of Vaishnavas. May Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings, like Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty. Nimisha, all are called Yadus or Satvatas. The husband of the goddess of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on the earth, the supreme all in all, be merciful upon me. In his fascinating demonstration of how Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Srila Jiva Goswami cites verse 22 in Paramatma Sandarbha, Anuchedas 104 and 111. Anucheda 104. That the Supreme is the original author of the Vedic literatures is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam 111. In the words, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye, it is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. Here the word Brahma means the Vedic scriptures. Adi Kaveye means to the demigod Brahma. Hrida means not by words but through the heart, and Tene means manifested. The word Brahma is derived from the word Brihat, great. In this way, it is said that the scriptures, Brahma, are the great knowledge or the knowledge of everything. The word Hrida here teaches us that the Supreme Lord is the Supersoul in everyone's heart and the master of all potencies, because he is the original teacher of all knowledge. The Supreme Lord is thus the original author of the Vedas, as Vedanta Sutra 113, Shastra Yoni Tvat, says. This is also described in the following words of Svetasvatara Upanishad 6:18. Because I desire liberation, let me surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who first enlightened Lord Brahma in Vedic knowledge through Lord Brahma's heart. The Lord is the original source of all enlightenment and spiritual advancement. The liberated individual souls are certainly not the original authors of the Vedic scriptures. This is confirmed by the word muhyanti. Even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1:1:1, this means that even the great demigods such as Lord Sesha are not the authors of the Vedas. The Vedas are manifest from the breathing of Lord Gaudakshya Vishnu. He is one of the many forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he enjoyed pastimes of sleep. At that time, the Vedas were revealed to the demigod Brahma. That the Supreme Lord taught the Vedas to the demigod. So that's why it says that Vedic literatures and literatures in pursuance of the Vedic literatures should not be thought of badly, right? Because they're coming from the Supreme Lord himself. Does that make sense? And then the understandings of those that have been spoken by great sages to other qualified personalities, and those come to us as the shruti, as smriti, or tradition. Right? In other words, the practical application of the shruti, or the Veda itself. Does that make sense? May the Lord, who in the beginning of creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, be pleased with me. So, interesting to note here, this would be, you know, in the eternal discussion between modern educators, whether you put the knowledge in or draw it out. Then here we have where Krishna drew out from the heart of Brahma the knowledge here. He amplified the potent knowledge. So it means the knowledge is there, but it has to be brought out. Right? And inspired him. So the Lord reveals, because it's there. The soul is Sat Chit Ananda. Right? So Chit is knowledge. So that's there. It's inherent in the soul. But still, Krishna has to bring that out. Yeah? Does that make sense? Now, in an alternate interpretation of Vedanta Sutra 1:1:4, Tattu Samanvayata will be discussed. After it is seen that the Supreme is the original author of the Vedic scriptures, Shastra Yonitvat, the next sutra, beginning with the words Tattu, is spoken. In the word Samanvayat, the prefix sam means all, and anvayat means the truth described in the Vedas. In this way, it is concluded that the Supreme must be the author of the Vedas, for only he has all knowledge. Because the individual soul does not have all knowledge, he cannot be the Vedas' author. Right? So the Vedas said to be all knowledge. It's pointed out, in the Mahabharata, it's pointing out that all knowledge of the world, Vedic and contemporary, is all within the Mahabharata. Right? It's all based on the Mahabharata. So anything else will simply be various manifestations of the same knowledge. Does that make sense? It means there's no knowledge outside of that. And the Mahabharata is taken as like a compilation of the essence of the Vedic knowledge. So Veda means knowledge. So all knowledge that there is actually Veda. But if it's properly connected to the Lord, then it becomes useful. Right? It gives one transcendental understanding. But if it's not connected to the Lord, it's called ignorance. Does that make sense? So the Vedas are those books that show that connection. Right? And where you take a study and you remove the Lord from it, right? That would be called ignorance. Right? Let us say that we take Gita. And in there is an explanation of how the mind works. But if we remove that only and study it as, you know, psychology, then how would we think about that? Does that make sense? What would be our perspective on that? It's not in the context of Krishna and Arjuna's conversation. There's no reference to the Supreme Lord. Simply you give technical details how the mind works, right? By contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment. When attachment develops, then you perform activities. From performing the activities, then you get the results. Then from that you become entangled, and then you fall down into ignorance. Okay, so that works. It works for the devotees, works for the karmis, it works. So now we take that and separate it out of the Gita. Right? So would we call this transcendental knowledge? No, we call this ignorance. Right? Because even though it is giving us an understanding of material energy, it's keeping us in the material energy. Does that make sense? So in this way, we can also see is how the modern knowledge is simply Veda, but it has been extracted from that, and without any showing any connection actually to Krishna. Does that make sense? Because all the literatures always open with creation and show their connection to the Supreme Lord. That's just how the shastras work. Right? Does that make sense? Does this make sense, or we said something that's a little bewildering here? No? Some question? Yes.
Whereas, what did you mean by open with creation? They all open with creation?
They all open with creation. Generally, you'll see in all the major works that they describe the creation to some degree that's appropriate for their particular topic. Right? Like Bhagavatam opens with creation, shows where it connects. Mahabharata opens with creation. Even the Bible opens with creation, right? So it's a standard procedure, is that you start with God and then you bring down the creation to the point of where this particular topic is manifest, or showing the topic's connection to that creation. So then you can follow it back. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah, so it's showing that it's coming from Krishna because it's complete. Then others may extract things from that, and as long as it's showing its connection with the Supreme, then it is also considered bona fide knowledge, right? Useful. Either it's direct or indirect. Like Pancharatra is agama. It's being extracted from the Veda, but it's directly in connection with the Supreme Lord. Right? It's ekayana. It doesn't have any other purpose than worship of Vishnu. Right? But let's say the Jyotish Shastra, like the Sanskrit, then it is a knowledge that's coming from the Lord. Right? Narayanad Udbhuto Yadam Varnakramaha. That all the varnas, all the letters, all the sounds, they're all coming from Narayana. Right? So it's showing the connection. Then, but the grammar itself, if it's used in the Lord's service, then it has spiritual benefit. If it's not used, then technically it becomes ignorance. You know, because ignorance is described that's what keeps you in illusion about your relationship with the Lord and continues material existence. Right? Knowledge is that which reveals your relationship with the Supreme Lord and frees you from material existence. Yeah, does that make sense? So he's pointing out how the Shastra is not therefore written by those who come under illusion. It has to, because therefore it's not complete. But those, the great sages in that, they base things on the Veda, so in that way, with that connection, it becomes complete. That makes sense? But the Veda itself originally comes from the Supreme Lord. Alright? Anucheda 110. That the Supreme Lord has all knowledge, and the Supreme Individual Soul, Jai Ho.
The moon still looks like it was hit by a tornado.
Oh, okay.
Because I finally took all those books that were stacked up and went underneath and found the, well, interesting.
Okay.
Expression forms of life.
That the Supreme Lord has all knowledge and the individual soul does not is confirmed by these words of the Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.19. The Supreme Lord knows everything, but no one knows Him. Right? In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.1, the word Muhyanti, by Him even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, indirectly affirms that the Supreme Lord has all knowledge, and no individual soul has all knowledge like the Lord. The words Surayo Muhyanti means even the greatest suras, devotees in positions of cosmic management, like Lord Sesha, are bewildered to understand the true meaning of the Vedas. Nimisha, the meaning of the word sura in this connection is explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to Bhagavatam 5.18.27. Yet sometimes suras or devotees are also bewildered by the illusory energy and falsely claim to be the maintainer of the entire universe. So sura means one who accepts the Supreme Lord. The simplest definition Prabhupada gives is one who in a moment of distress turns to the Lord is a sura. And one who in a moment of distress does not turn to the Lord but his own machinations is an asura. Right? So that's it. It doesn't say asura is one who always thinks of Krishna, right? In other words, a devotee who under pressure takes shelter of the Lord is sura, right? But better than that is even when things are going nice that you remember the Lord, right? The demigods, when things are going great, you know, Nandan Kana is all happening, then, you know, they're doing their demigod thing. And then when, you know, a big buffalo walks in and, you know, pushes Indra off the throne and then sits there and says, okay, I'm the boss now, then everybody thinks of Vishnu. Right? You know, or Vritrasura comes along, then they think of Vishnu. Like this. Whatever it is, if a trouble happens in their happiness, then they think of the Lord. So that establishes them as devotees. Right? That's why the demigods are the devotees. But they can be a little materialistic. Does that make sense? So, therefore, one should not be distracted or critical of the point that devotees may have material desire, because that's the definition of the sura. Right? It's not that they have material desire, but in moments of distress they take shelter. So that would infer that in moments of happiness, even if they don't remember the Lord, they're still devotees. But if they remembered the Lord, they'd be better devotees. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, you know, so that points out because of this, then they cannot be the supreme, the authors of the Veda. Right? Because the Veda is perfect and complete. So only Krishna is that. Everyone else is his part and parcel. Any questions on that? Okay, in his book Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, within the Abhideya division, assigning it to Chapter 13 entitled Aikantiki Namashraya Sadhana Bhakti. Sadhana Bhakti executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prickett. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, without whom glorification, remembrances, audience, prayers, hearing, and worship can at once, about whom, excuse me, can at once cleanse the effects of all sins of the performer. Right? So, by taking, so they're bringing out that by taking exclusive shelter of the holy name, then all perfection is obtained. Right? Means until one can do that, in other words, that should be the goal. We should be trying to do that. But until we can do that, means we continue that endeavor, but our distractions then should be engaged in the Lord's service, right? According to the rules given by Shastra. Because then following those rules, it's connected to Krishna, because the rules are Krishna. And our purpose is to serve Krishna. So that gives us that devotional development. We do it without attachment to the result. Therefore, we're freed from those material attachments. And so with time, then we'll be able to just take shelter of the holy name. That makes sense? Right? So before it was bringing out these elements of the universal form, especially the just how one's situated, that one's all one's character and qualities and all that are parts and parcels of the material, I mean of the universal form. So that if one engages those in the Lord's service, then, you know, that's what one should be doing. But now we're starting to bring out the element of this pure devotional service based on the hearing and chanting. Right. Any questions?
One question. The Supreme Lord knows everything, but no one knows Him.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know.
See, that means Krishna knows everything, but no one knows Him means no one can know Him fully, right? Because Krishna is unlimited, we're not, right? We can connect to the unlimited and thereby, gain the experience of unlimited, but we are not. Does that make sense? So what we do know is perfect and complete, because anything from Krishna is perfect and complete. But the point is the Veda being the full knowledge, that can only come from Krishna, because only Krishna knows everything. We can only know a portion of what Krishna knows, how much He reveals. Like I said, in Brahma's heart, the potent knowledge. All right, so it can be drawn out, you can gain that knowledge. Does that make sense?
This question was already in Vritti 4.3. Discussed. For example, although to fully understand the Lord's energies, names, and expansions is not possible, Krishna, in His mercy, does reveal Himself by the medium of pure devotional service up to the limits of an individual soul's capacity for transcendental knowledge. Mm. A person may be learned and scholarly, but he cannot realize the Lord except through the Shastra illuminated by the example and teachings of the Lord's pure devotees. Thus, to know the Lord, one must first approach a spiritual master who not only is well versed in the Vedic literatures, but who is also a great devotee with actual realization of the Lord and His different energies.
Hmm. Yes, well spoken.
I just read it.
Yeah. Still, you found it. You found it. Okay. So then you have the general things. Then you have the on page 86 or 85. Then you have the homework assignments for this chapter. And then from Monday, we'll continue with Chapter 5. Okay? Yes. Jai Ho, Guntaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janyatai Gaura Premanandi.